A nod of acknowledgement, too, just to piss him off. Maybe he'll come at me and we can work out some of our aggression on the tile floor. I lift my hands to motion for him to come forward, but then the lawyer's admonition rings in my ears. No fighting, no detention, no bad behavior. Dad had stood next to Greer outside the police station, glowering as the lawyer reeled off instructions. One wrong step, and the prosecutor will be all over it. You have that assault charge for whooping that kid's butt at your school last year. I had to bite a hole through my tongue to keep from defending myself. Greer knows why I beat that boy's face into a pulp, but I'd never hurt a woman. Though if there ever was a woman who needed hurting, it was Brooke Davidson. I hadn't killed her, but I'm sure as hell not sorry she's dead. You shouldn't be here. A low, angry voice says from behind me. I pluck the athletic tape out of my gym bag before turning to face Ronald Richmond. That's so, I say easily, taking a seat on the padded metal bench in front of my locker. Coach kicked Brian Mouse off because he accidentally hit his girlfriend. I roll my eyes. As in her face accidentally fell onto his fist and she sported a shiner for 3 weeks and all her homecoming pictures had to be digitally altered? That accident? Beside me, Easton snorts. I finish wrapping my hands and toss East the tape. Ronnie scowls. About as accidental as you offing your dad's trashy girlfriend. Well, then you want to tuck away Brian the abuser's invite because I didn't kill anyone. I give him my friendliest smile. Ronnie juts his weak chin. That's not what Delacorte is saying. Daniel's not around to talk about shit. My dad had that rapist asshole shipped off to a juvenile military prison. I'm not talking about Daniel, my teammate sneers. Judge Delacorte was over having drinks with my dad yesterday, and he said the case against you is open and shut. Video shows you went into the apartment. Video shows you leaving. Hope you like getting it up the ass, Royal. Easton starts to rise. I clamp a hand around his wrist and drag him down. Around us, the team looks uneasy, some of them whispering to each other. Judge Delacorte's dirty as hell, I answer coldly. He tried to bribe my dad to prevent Daniel from being punished. It hadn't worked, so I guess now he's coming after me to stick it to my father. Maybe you don't belong here. Liam Hunter's quiet voice slices through the room. We all swivel toward him in surprise. Hunter's not much for talking. He's all about action on the field. He doesn't run with our crowd despite the numerous invitations that I know come his way. He keeps to himself. The only person I've seen him hang around with is Wade. But then again, everyone gets along with Wade. I quirk an eyebrow toward my friend, who responds with a small shrug. He's as clueless as I am about Hunter's thoughts. You got a problem with me, Hunter? Say it. This time, when Easton pushes to his feet, I don't stop him. As for me, I remain seated. As much as I like to solve my arguments with a fist, the lawyer's warning sits like a weight on my shoulders. We want to win the state championship, Hunter points out. And that means no distractions. You're a distraction. Even if you didn't do it, there's still going to be a lot of negative attention. Even if I didn't do it? It's a big step from beating some kid's face in for trying to smear my mother to actually killing someone, but the entire locker room appears to be making that leap today. Thanks for your support, East says sarcastically. Wade decides to step in. Reed's a hothead. No offense, brother, he says to me. None taken. There's no point in pretending I don't like a little physical violence, but just because I like to punch a few people in the face doesn't make me a killer. But since I didn't do it, then this will all go away. In the meantime, there's going to be a circus around here. Ronnie decides to pick up Hunter's train of thought and stupidly run with it. We'll constantly be asked questions about it when the focus should be on football. This is the last year for half of us starters. Is this the way we want to go out? More than a few of my teammates are nodding in agreement. Status is everything to a lot of these kids, and graduating with a football championship under their belts will give them some serious bragging rights. But I never imagined that they'd hang me up by my nuts just so they can win a damn game. I slowly unclench my fingers. No violence, I remind myself. None. Sensing my patience is strained to the limit, Wade gets up. Ronnie, we have all of a dozen reporters who cover our games, and most of them ride our jocks so hard I don't even need to get laid after the last whistle. Besides, Reed's one of our best defensive players. Without him, I'm going to need to score 5, maybe 6 touchdowns, and I don't want to work that hard. He turns to Hunter. I hear what you're saying, but Reed's not going to be a distraction, are you, man? I shake my head curtly. No, I'm here to play football, nothing else. Hope so, the big man says. And then it hits me, what Hunter's really concerned about. He's a scholarship student at Astor and needs a free ride for college. He's worried my drama is going to scare colleges away. Scouts are still going to come to the game to see you, Hunter, I reassure him. He looks doubtful, but Wade pipes up in support. No doubt, they're all salivating over you. Plus, the more wins, the better you look, right? That seems to satisfy Hunter, because he doesn't voice another objection. See? Wade says cheerfully. It's all good. So let's just go practice our nuts off and compare notes about who we're all taking a winter formal next month. One of our wide receivers snickers. Seriously, Carlisle? What are we, a bunch of chicks now? With that, the mood in the locker room lightens. This is bullshit! Ronnie snaps. He shouldn't freaking be here! Or maybe it doesn't. I stifle a sigh. At Ronnie's unhappy glare, East slaps his chest. Come on, Richmond. Let's do a few Oklahoma drills. Maybe if you can put me on my ass once, you won't worry so much about the press. Ronnie flushes. The Oklahoma drill requires one player to take on another while the teammates huddle around in a circle. East hardly ever loses, and certainly never to Ronnie. Fuck you, Easton. That's the problem with you Royals. You think violence solves everything. My brother takes a step forward. It's football. It's supposed to be violent. Gotcha. So killing a woman you don't like is just natural for you guys, huh? An ugly smile twists his mouth. I guess that's why your mother killed herself. She was tired of dealing with psychos. The thin thread of my self-control snaps as a red haze washes over my eyes. This piece of crap can say whatever he wants about me. But to drag my mother into this? Oh, hell no. I'm on him in a heartbeat. One fist slamming into his jaw as we both crash to the floor. Shouts break out all around us. Hands reach out and grab my collar and the back of my shirt, but nobody is able to haul me off him. I hear a sickening crack. Primal satisfaction rushes through me when blood spurts out of Ronnie's nostrils. I broke his nose, and I don't give a shit. I get one more blow in, a jab to his chin, before I'm suddenly wrenched away.
Royal, where's your fucking head?
Instantly, the anger in my gut is sucked away and replaced by a knot of anxiety. Coach is the one who pulled me to my feet, and now he's standing there, his face red and his eyes glittering with fury.
Come with me,
he growls, bunching his fist into the bottom of my practice jersey. The locker room is as silent as a church. Ronnie is staggering to his feet and wiping his bloody nose. The other players are staring at me in apprehension. Before Coach drags me through the doorway, I catch a glimpse of East's uneasy expression, Wade's frustrated one, Hunter's resigned one. Shame churns inside me. Damn it! Here I am, trying to prove to these guys that Royals don't answer every minor bit of bullshit with a fist, and what do? I bring out the fists. Fuck.
Chapter 6 Ella. Word of Reed's arrest spreads like a prairie fire. While working the register at the bakery, I can hear the aborted whispers and feel the weight of covert stares. The royal name is mentioned frequently. One fashionable elderly lady who comes in every Monday for a blueberry scone and a cup of Earl Grey tea point-blank asks me, "Are you that royal ward?" "Yes." I swipe her heavy platinum card and hand it back. She presses her pink-painted lips together. "Doesn't seem like a good environment for a young lady." It's the best home I've ever had. My cheeks burn, part embarrassment and part indignation. For all their faults, and the royals have many, my statement is entirely truthful. I've never had it better. For the first 17 years of my life, I lived with my flighty mother, one foot in the gutter, one hand, reaching for the sky. At any given moment, I wasn't sure we'd have enough to eat during the day, and a roof over our heads at night. "You seem like a nice girl." The lady sniffs, her whole demeanor saying that she's reserving judgment on that comment. I know what she's thinking. I might be a nice girl, but I live with those evil royals, and one of them is on the front page of the Bayview News as a potential suspect in the death of Brooke Davidson. Not many people know who Brooke is, other than she was the sometime companion of Callum Royal. But everyone knows the royals. They're the biggest employer in Bayview, if not the state. Thanks. I'll bring out your stuff when it's ready. I dismiss her with a polite smile and turn to the next patron, a younger professional woman who's clearly torn between wanting to hear the gossip and wanting to make whatever early morning appointment she's all dressed up for. At the wave of my hand for her card, she makes the quick decision that she can't be late. Good call, lady. The line moves on, and so do the comments, some hushed, some intentionally carrying across the small cafe. I ignore them all. So does my boss, Lucy, although her ignorance stems from busyness rather than deliberate indifference. Weird morning, isn't it? Lucy says, as I'm hanging up my apron on the back hook. She's elbows deep in flour. Why do you say that? I feign ignorance. From the racks of cooling baked goods, I pluck an extra muffin and donut for Reed. If it were me, I wouldn't be able to eat a bite, but that boy seems to have a stomach of steel. Apparently, being accused of murder doesn't faze him one bit. Lucy shrugs. Vibe seems off. Everyone's quiet this morning. It's Monday, I say, and that reply seems to satisfy her. After all my goodies are packed away, I sling my backpack over my shoulder and make the short walk to Astor Park. It's hard to believe that only a few months have passed since I started school here. Time flies when you're fighting bullies and falling in love. Only Easton is waiting for me on the front steps when I arrive from the bakery. I frown, because usually Reed is with him, but my man is nowhere to be seen. It's clear by the acre of space around Easton that the Astor Park kids are all up to date on their daily news. Any other day, and this gorgeous boy would be surrounded by girls.
What'd you bring me, sis?
Easton jogs over to snatch the white pastry box from my hands. Donuts, muffins. I look around again. Where's Reed? Easton doesn't look up from his examination of the goodie box, so I can't make out his expression. I do notice that his shoulders tense up a little.
Talking to Coach, is all he says.
Oh, okay. Like, a meeting or something?
Or something.
I narrow my eyes. What aren't you telling me? Before he can respond, Val comes strolling over to us. Hey, girl. She flings an arm around my shoulder. Either she hasn't read the papers yet or doesn't care. I'm hoping it's the latter. Hey, Val. As I greet her, I don't miss the relief on Easton's face. He's definitely keeping something from me. Val's gaze falls to the box in Easton's hand. Tell me you have something for me, she begs. Chocolate chip muffin? I smile wryly as she grabs the muffin and takes a huge bite. Bad morning. You have no idea. Jordan's alarm went off at 5 this morning, and she slept through Katy Perry's Rise for 5 repeats. I officially hate Katy Perry and Jordan. That's what makes you hate Jordan? In the Chronicles of Mean Girls, Jordan Carrington might be the patron saint. There are so many things to hate her for other than her music taste. Val laughs. Among other things. Anyway, you're a goddess and a trooper, because your morning must be a million times worse than mine. I frown at her. What do you mean? She raises one eyebrow, which gives her already pixie-like face an even more elfish look. I mean, Reed beating up Ronald Richmond at practice? Everyone's talking about it, and it only happened an hour ago. My jaw drops. Then I spin around to glare at Easton. Reed beat someone up? Why didn't you tell me? He smiles around a mouthful of pastry, and I'm forced to wait until he swallows before I get a reply.
Because it's no biggie, okay? Richmond was running his mouth, and Reed put a stop to it. He didn't even get suspended or anything. Coach just gave him a warning.
I'm already marching to the front doors. I can't believe Reed got into a fight, and Easton didn't tell me about it.
Wait up, Val calls out.
I stop to let her catch up to me, then take off at a brisk pace again. Maybe I can intercept Reed before he goes to his first class. I know he can handle himself in a fight, but I want to see him with my own two eyes and make sure he's okay.
I saw the paper this morning, Val says in a quiet voice, as she keeps up with my breakneck strides.
My aunt and uncle were talking about it. Things are bad in the royal palace, huh?
Badder than bad, I admit.
We're halfway to the senior wing when the first bell chimes. Crap. I skid to a stop, torn between hurrying forward to find Reed and making it to class on time. Val solves the dilemma by touching my arm.
If he's already in class, his teacher won't let you go in and talk to him, she points out.
She's right. My shoulders sag as I turn back in the opposite direction.
Again, Val keeps up with me.
Ella. I keep walking. Ella, come on, wait. She grabs my arm again, and there's concern etched into her face as she studies me.
He didn't kill anyone.
I can't even begin to explain how relieved I am to hear her say that. My own doubts about Reed's innocence have been gnawing at my insides ever since he got arrested. I hate myself for even entertaining those thoughts, but every time I close my eyes, I remember his torn stitches, the blood, the fact that he went to the penthouse without telling me.
Of course he didn't, I force myself to say.
Her gaze sharpens.
Then why do you look so worried?
I'm not worried. I hope my firm tone is convincing. I think it is because her features relax.
It's just, everything is such a mess right now, Val. Reed's arrest, Steve showing up.
What? She exclaims. It takes me a second to remember that I haven't even told her about my father yet.
I didn't want to say it over text, and there wasn't a single opportunity to call Val yesterday because of all the chaos in the house.
Yeah, Steve's back.
Surprise? He's not dead after all.
Val looks a bit dazed.
You're joking, right?
Nope.
Before I can elaborate, the second bell rings. This is the one that warns us we have 1 minute to get to class, or else.
I'll explain everything at lunch, okay?
She nods slowly, the stunned expression never leaving her face. We part ways at the next hallway, and I head for my first class. Within 3 seconds of sitting down at my desk for first period, I discover that Val isn't the only one who's seen the morning paper. When the teacher turns her back on the class for a moment, some douche leans past 2 desks to shout whisper,
"You can come live at my house, Ella, if you're scared of being murdered in your bed."
I ignore him.
Or maybe that's what turns your type on.
When I first arrived at Astor Park, I learned pretty fast that most of the kids here aren't worth my time or effort. This campus is so gorgeous, with its lush green lawns and tall brick buildings. It looks picture perfect. But it's filled with the unhappiest, least secure teens I've ever had the misfortune of meeting. I swivel in my chair, lean across Bitsy Hamilton's desk, and stare directly into the douche's muddy green eyes.
"What's your name?"
He blinks.
"What?"
"Your name," I repeat impatiently. "What is it?" Bitsy raises a hand to hide a smirk. The douche's face twists into an indignant sneer.
"Aspen,"
he replies tightly.
"Aspen? For real?
What a dumbass name."
Bitsy's laughter is barely being contained at this point.
"It's Aspen for real," she chokes out.
"Jesus, okay, here's the deal, Aspen," I've dealt with more in my short life than you'll ever experience, so all the idiotic insults you can come up with only make you look pathetic. I don't give a rat's ass what you think of me. Actually, if you don't step back and rethink your decision to even look in my direction, I'll make it my sole goal for the rest of this semester to drive you literally insane. I'll stuff week-old seafood in your locker. I'll destroy your homework. I'll tell each and every girl in this place that you have gonorrhea. I'll have pictures of you wearing girls' undies made up and distributed in giant full-color prints around school. I smile coldly at him. Do you want that to happen to you? Aspen's face turns as white as the snowy town he was named after. I was just joking, he mumbles. Your jokes suck. Hope you have a job with your daddy waiting, because I can't imagine your little brain making it through college. Then I spin around and face the front of the room. At lunch, our table is subdued. I fill Val in about Steve's sudden reappearance, but we don't get a chance to discuss how shaken up I am about it, because Reed, Easton, and Wade join us instead of sitting at the football table. That's the first sign that something is wrong. I mean, Reed's been charged with murder, so life is very wrong in general, but the fact that he's not sitting with his teammates tells me that things are worse than I thought. You really didn't get in trouble for fighting at school? I murmur to him as he settles in the seat next to mine. He shakes his head.
Got a warning.
Then his expression grows tortured.
But you know it's going to get back to Dad and my lawyer. They won't like it.
I don't like it, but I paste on an encouraging smile, because I know he's already under enough stress as it is. It's just... I love Reed, I really do, but his temper is his own worst enemy. If he can't get himself under control, things could get a million times worse for him. Across the table, Val moves her kale salad around her plate. Her gaze keeps darting toward Wade, and then back to her plate. Wade is doing the same thing, sneaking peeks at Val before focusing intently on his burger. They're making obvious efforts not to look at each other, and for some reason, that cheers me up. It's nice to see that I'm not the only one in a state of pure misery. Immediately, guilt gets the better of me, because if Val's studiously avoiding Wade, and he's too embarrassed to meet her eyes, then something bad must have happened. I make a mental note to ask Val about it when we're alone.
So, Wade says, when the silence becomes unbearably long, who's excited about winter formal?
Nobody answers.
Really? No one?
He slides a pointed look to Val.
What about you, Carrington? Got a date?
She gives him a stony glare.
I'm not going.
The table goes quiet again. Val picks at her salad with the same half-hearted energy I'm using to pick at my chicken.
Not hungry?
Reed asks gruffly. I don't have much of an appetite, I admit.
You worried?
He murmurs. A little.
More like a lot.
But I tamp down the truth and paste on another smile. I think Reed sees through it, because he leans over and kisses me. I let him distract me with his mouth, because it feels good, but deep down I know that kisses are a temporary fix. Pulling back, I tell him that. You can't kiss the worry out of me. His hand roams up my side to settle right under my breast. His thumb brushes the bottom curve, sending shivers through me. I stare into his blue eyes, full of wicked promise, and decide, okay, maybe he can kiss the worry out of me. I move a few strands of his silky hair away from his face, wishing we were alone and he could turn his unspoken promises into a reality. His hands tug me forward so he can kiss me again. This time, I open my mouth and let his tongue sweep inside.
Not while I'm eating, Easton groans. You're ruining my appetite.
I don't think that's remotely possible, Val says. I smile against Reed's mouth and then settle back in my seat.
Well, I'm getting turned on. Anyone want to make a trip to the bathroom with me? Wade asks cheerfully. Val's mouth stays firmly shut.
Everything's going to be fine, Reed tells me. Except Easton's stomach, maybe. He might need medical attention after inhaling all those carbs.
He gestures to the mountain of pasta on Easton's plate. I'm a nervous eater, his brother replies. I make an attempt to follow Reed's lead and lighten the mood. What was your excuse last week when you ate an entire batch of cookies?
That was just me being hungry. Besides, they were cookies. Who needs an excuse to eat cookies?
I feel like that's a sexual question, Wade chimes in. And the correct answer is, no one ever needs an excuse to eat cookies.
You do need permission, though, Val says tersely, focusing her gaze on Wade for the first time since he sat down.
And if your mouth is all over someone else's cookies, then other bakers aren't going to be interested in offering you their cookies. Then she gets up from the table and stomps off.
Hey, Wade shouts after her.
I only had those other cookies that one time, and only because the baker I wanted to get the cookies from was closed. He shoots up from his seat and hustles after Val, leaving Easton, Reed, and me staring after them.
I have a feeling they aren't talking about cookies, Easton remarks.
No kidding. And as much as I hate seeing Val upset, I can't help but envy her problems. Relationship issues are a lot easier to manage when you're not worrying that your boyfriend might go to prison.
Chapter 7. Reed. The moment I walk through the front door, my dad pokes his head into the parlor and jerks a finger in my direction. I need you in my study, now. Ella and I exchange a wary look. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that word of my fight with Richmond got back to Dad. Damn it. I was hoping to tell him myself.
Should I come with you?
Ella asks with a grimace. After a beat, I shake my head. Nah, go upstairs and do some homework or something. This won't be fun. When she hesitates, I give her a gentle nudge. Go, I'll be up soon. I wait in the parlor until she disappears upstairs, then release the unhappy sigh that's been jammed in my chest all day long. School sucked ass today, and not just because I broke a teammate's nose. The whispers and stares got to me. Normally, I don't give a crap what my classmates think of me, but today the tension in the air was almost suffocating. Everyone wonders if I killed Brooke. Most believe it. Even some of my own teammates. Hell, sometimes I think Ella might believe it, too. She hasn't said that, but at lunch I caught her staring at me when she thought I wasn't looking. She had this expression on her face. I can't even describe it. Not quite doubt, but apprehension, maybe? A flicker of sadness, too? I told myself that she was just freaked out about everything, but a part of me wonders if she wonders. If she keeps looking at me like that because she's trying to figure out if she's dating a killer or some shit.
Reed.
Dad's sharp voice spurs me to motion. I march down the hall to his study, and my mood sinks even lower when I spot Greer behind the commanding desk. Dad is sitting on the nearby armchair.
What's wrong?
I ask instantly.
Do you really need to ask?
Dad's expression is dark and menacing.
I got a phone call from the headmaster earlier. He told me all about your little temper tantrum in the locker room.
I bristle.
It wasn't a temper tantrum. Richmond was saying shit about Mom.
For once, the mention of my mother doesn't cause my dad to soften.
I don't care if he was insulting Jesus Christ himself. You can't fight at school, Reed. Not anymore, and especially not when you're facing a second-degree murder charge.
Equal parts shame and anger weigh on my gut. My dad's face is red, his fists clenched together at his sides, but through the haze of anger in his eyes, I catch a glimpse of something even worse. Disappointment. I can't remember the last time I cared whether or not my father was disappointed in me, but I kind of care right now.
Sit down, Reed.
The request comes from Greer, who has his trusty gold pen poised over his legal pad. There are a few things we need to go over. Reluctantly, I walk over to one of the padded chairs and sit down. My dad stiffly lowers himself into the other chair.
We'll discuss the fighting in a moment, Greer says. First, you need to tell me why your DNA was found under Brooke's fingernails.
Shock slams into me.
What?
I spoke to the assistant district attorney today, as well as the detectives in charge of the investigation. They were waiting for DNA testing to be conducted before they divulged any details to us, but the results are back, and believe me, they were eager to share them. Greer's face becomes grave. Skin cells were found in the fingernail scrapings they took from Brooke. DNA matches yours.
How did they get my DNA?
I demand.
I didn't provide a sample.
They have it from the last arrest. I wince. Last arrest. That sounds bad.
They can do that?
Once you're in the system, you're there forever. Greer shuffles a few papers while Dad looks on grimly. We're going to go over your night, step by step, second by second. Don't leave anything out. If you passed guess, I want to know about it. What did you do after you went to see Brooke?
I came home.
Right after?
Yes.
Greer's features sharpen. Are you sure about that?
I furrow my brow.
I think so?
Wrong answer. The security footage has you arriving an hour later.
Arriving where?
Here, he snaps, looking annoyed. Your home has video surveillance, Reed, or have you forgotten?
I glance at my father, who nods grimly.
We checked the tapes when you were at school, he tells me.
The cameras show you coming home at 10 p.m.,
a full hour after you left the O'Halloran penthouse, Greer points out.
I scan my brain again, trying to remember that night.
I drove around the city a bit, I say slowly. I was still pissed about that whole conversation with Brooke. I wanted to calm myself down before I...
No, my dad interrupts.
No what?
I'm so fucking confused right now.
You don't say stuff like that, you hear me? You cannot insinuate, even between us, that you were in a state that required calming down that night. You fought with Brooke, but it was no big deal, Dad says firmly. You were calm when you went there and calm when you left.
Frustration knots inside me.
What does it matter if I drove around for an hour or 3 or 10?
I burst out.
Their tapes show me leaving the penthouse 20 minutes after I got there. So what if I didn't get home until an hour later?
They're going to subpoena your security footage, Greer tells my father, as if I hadn't even spoken. It's only a matter of time.
Again, what does it matter? I press.
Greer points the pen at me.
It matters because you lied. If you lie once on the stand, they will crucify you there.
The stand? I'm going to have to testify?
A whirlwind of emotions forms one giant lump in my stomach. I've been telling myself all along that the police will find the real killer during the investigation, but it looks like they think I'm the real killer.
The detectives noticed you touched your waist a few times and that bloodstains on your shirt developed throughout the interrogation.
Fuck,
I mutter. It feels like a rope just got wrapped around my neck.
How did that happen?
Greer pushes.
I don't know. Maybe when I was driving or I reached for something?
And this injury was the one you sustained how?
I don't have to be a lawyer to know that my next admission is going to sound bad. I got stabbed on the docks.
And you were down there. Why?
Fighting, I mumble under my breath.
What was that?
Fighting. I was fighting.
You were fighting, he repeats.
There's no law against fighting. One of the guys I fight at the docks is the son of an assistant AG. He claims that if we all agree to participate, we aren't doing anything wrong. Wanting to get hit by someone else isn't a prosecutable offense. But I guess it can be evidence of someone who's violent and possibly murderous.
And no exchange of money. I have a Franklin Dutmeyer, otherwise known as Fat Deuce, who says that Easton Royal places bets with him for football games. You telling me he never bets on your fights?
Greer doesn't wait for my lie.
We interviewed Justin Markowitz, who says that there is plenty of money exchanged.
It doesn't sound like he needs a response, and I'm right, because Greer barrels forward like he's ready to give the closing argument to put me away.
You fight for money. You fight because it makes you feel good. You put a kid in the hospital for no good reason.
I do interrupt this time.
He insulted my mother.
Like this Richmond boy whose nose you broke today? He also insulted your mother?
Yes, I say tightly.
And what about Brooke? Did she insult your mother too?
What are you saying? My father growls.
I'm saying your son has a temper, Greer snaps. You so much as breathe on his dead mother's grave,
Dad flinches,
and he loses control.
Greer tosses his pen on the desk and glares at me. The DA has a real hard-on for this case. I don't know why. They've got unsolved crimes up the wazoo, murders that happen regularly from the drug trade, bookies like Fat Deuce running around taking money from kids. But they like this case, and they like you as the one who did it. Our investigators did a little digging, and there are rumors that Dinah O'Halloran may have had a relationship with DA Pat Merrilt. This time it's Dad who curses. God damn it. The rope gets tighter. They're going to interview every single one of your classmates. If you've had problems with any of them, you'd better tell me about it now. You're supposed to be one of the best lawyers in the state, Dad says testily. You're asking me to perform a miracle, Greer snaps back. No, I interrupt. We're asking you to find out the truth, because while I don't mind taking a free shot to my jaw, I do care about going to prison for something I didn't do. I'm an asshole, for sure, but I don't hit women, and I sure as shit would never kill one. Dad steps close and lays a hand on my shoulder. You win this case, Greer. I don't care what else you have on your desk. Nothing else matters until Reed's free of this. The or else is implied. Greer's mouth thins, but he doesn't object. Instead, he rises, tucks all his papers away, and says, I'll get to work. What should we be doing while the investigation continues? Dad asks, seeing Greer to the door. I'm stuck in the chair, wondering how in the hell my life has come to this. I look down at my hands. Did I kill her? Did I dream leaving the penthouse? Am I suffering some weird memory lapse? Put on a happy face, act normally, and pretend you're not guilty. I'm not guilty, I growl. Greer pauses in the hall. The DA needs means, motive, and opportunity to prove the crime. Brooke struck her head on the fireplace with enough force to cause her brain to shear from the spinal cord. You're big and strong and like to punch people around. They have you on tape within the golden period, and they have motive. Oh, and Ella Harper? I tense up. What about her? Stay away from her, Greer says flatly. She's your biggest weakness.
Chapter 8. Ella. Reed is waiting for me on the front steps when I get to school. This time Easton is the one who's missing, but I'm kind of grateful to be alone with Reed, especially after last night. His meeting with Callum and Greer left him sullen and close-mouthed. And it was the first night in a long time that he didn't sleep in my bedroom. I didn't beg him to stay, but I did push him to talk. From the little he told me, I guess the lawyer is worried about Reed's fighting, and the fact that he was unaccounted for during the hour he left the penthouse to the time he got back to the royal mansion. That part I don't really get. So what if he didn't go home right away? It doesn't mean he was doing anything suspicious. Especially since the cops know he left the penthouse 20 minutes after he got there. Still, if it bugs Greer and Callum this much, then it must be important. So it's the first thing I bring up once I kiss Reed hello. I still don't get why that hour you were driving around means anything. His eyes darken, which, combined with his untucked dress shirt and unbuttoned blue blazer, gives him a bad boy vibe. I was never drawn to the bad boy type before I met Reed, but in him, I find it kind of irresistible.
It doesn't mean anything, he mutters.
Then why is the lawyer so worried about it? Reed shrugs.
I don't know,
but I don't want you to worry about it, okay? I can't not worry. I hesitate, not wanting to bring up this idea again, because I know it makes him mad, but I can't help myself. We still have time to run, I plead, then look around to make sure nobody is lurking near us. I lower my voice to a whisper. I don't want to sit here and wait for you to be locked up. His eyes lose that hard glint.
Baby, it's not going to happen.
How do you know that? A helpless feeling washes over me. I've already lost the only other person who meant something to me. I don't want to lose you, too. Sighing,
Reed pulls me into his arms and kisses my forehead.
You're not going to lose me.
His mouth travels lower and finds mine, and he slips his tongue between my lips, taking my breath away, making my knees a little weak. I grab onto his biceps so I don't fall over.
You're the strongest person I know,
he whispers against my lips.
So be strong for me, okay? We're not running. We're gonna stay and fight.
Before I can respond, a car engine snags my attention. I turn around in time to see a police cruiser pulling into the huge drive in front of the main building. Both Reed and I stiffen. Are they here for you? I ask anxiously. His dark expression is back, blue eyes fixed on the cruiser.
I don't know.
His face only gets cloudier when a stocky man with a bald head gets out of the driver's side.
Shit.
You know him? I hiss. Reed nods.
Detective Cousins. He's one of the cops who interviewed me.
Oh, God, this can't be good. Sure enough, Cousins marches over the second he spots us on the steps.
Mr. Royal, he says coolly.
Detective,
Reed answers, equally cool. There's a tense moment of silence before the detective turns his sharp gaze on me.
Ella O'Halloran, I presume.
Harper, I bite out. He actually rolls his eyes, which I find a bit rude.
Well, Ms. Harper, you're actually the first person on my list this morning.
I scowl at him. Your list of what?
Witnesses.
Cousins looks kind of smug as he smiles at me.
The headmaster is allowing me to conduct interviews in his office this morning. If you'd follow me, please.
I stay put. Callum already warned me something like this could happen, so I'm prepared for it. Sorry, but that's not happening. My guardian needs to be present for any and all interviews. I smile back, also smug.
So does my lawyer.
The detective narrows his eyes.
I see. So that's how we're going to play it?
He nods curtly.
Then I guess I'll be in touch with your guardian.
With that, he brushes past us and disappears through the front doors. Once he's gone, my confident facade drops and I instantly look at Reed.
He's interviewing people today? Who?
I don't know,
he says grimly. Oh my God, Reed, this is bad. This is really bad.
It'll be fine.
But his tone lacks its usual confidence.
Come on, we should get to class. Text me if you have any problems today, okay?
Why would I have any problems? I ask warily. His answer is cryptic.
Natives are restless.
This entire conversation, and Detective Cousins just showing up out of the blue, didn't do a thing to ease my worries, and I think Reed knows it. But he still puts on a smile and walks me to class as if everything is A-okay. After a quick kiss, he takes off in the other direction. I can't shake my concern. It falls over me like a heavy blanket. And by the time I walk into my chemistry class and settle in my usual seat next to Easton, despair is leaking out of every pore of my body.
What's wrong?
Easton asks immediately. I lean in to hiss in his ear.
The cops are here to interview people about Reed.
Easton is unfazed.
Nobody around here even knows about Reed and Brooke, he whispers back. The interviews will turn up nothing.
I peek around to make sure nobody is listening.
But everyone in school knows about his fights.
Another thought occurs to me.
And Savannah knows about the Dinah thing.
He frowns.
That has nothing to do with Brooke.
No, but they might be able to twist it around. I wring my hands together as my anxiety returns, even worse than before. If they find out that Dinah was blackmailing Reed's brother, they might come up with some crazy theory that Reed went to the penthouse looking for Dinah and killed Brooke instead. It's a ridiculous thought, but it's just plausible enough that Easton actually looks worried. Shit. If they talk to Savannah, do you think she'd say anything? He slowly shakes his head. I don't think so. That's not good enough for me, not in the slightest. We have English with her next period. I'll talk to her. And what? Threaten to break her legs if she squeals? His smile is weak and forced. No, but I'll make sure she knows how important it is not to bring up the Gideon and Dinah thing. Sav hates the Royals, he says in a tired voice. I'm not sure anything you say to her is going to convince her to keep her mouth shut. Maybe not, but I'm still going to try. After Kem, I race to the second floor to try to intercept Savannah Montgomery before she reaches our English classroom. Gideon's ex-girlfriend is the most contradictory person I've ever met. She was the one who gave me my tour of Astor Park Prep when I started here, and although she was kind of bitchy that day, she also offered a lot of unsolicited advice about how to survive this school. And even though she kept her distance and didn't talk to me much in class, she still took the time to warn me about Daniel Delacorte. And then she helped me and Val get revenge on the creep. So I guess she's an ally? Honestly, I don't really know. She's hard to read on a good day, and impossible to read every other day. Today falls into the unreadable category. She frowns when she sees me loitering outside the door, but she does say, "Hey," in a voice that lacks hostility. "Can we talk for a minute?" I ask quietly. Suspicion flickers in her eyes. "Why?" I will up some patience. "Because we need to talk. Class is starting. Mr. Winston is 10 minutes late every day, and you know it. We have time." I plead at her with my eyes. "Please." After a beat, she nods. "Fine, but make it fast." We walk silently down the hall toward a bank of lockers that squished into its own little corridor. Once we're alone, I don't waste any time. "The police are here today interviewing some of Reed's friends and classmates." She doesn't look at all surprised. "Yeah, I know. I already got a summons to Behringer's office. I'm talking to them at lunch." She rolls her eyes. "They wanted to pull me out of class, and I was like, fuck that. I'm not falling behind just because some royal killed his daddy's girlfriend." I flinch as if she slapped me. "Reed didn't kill anyone," I say between clenched teeth. Savannah shrugs. "Don't care if he did. I never liked Brooke." I furrow my brow. Did Savannah even know Brooke? I'm confused for a second until I realize that Sav did know her. She referred to Brooke as an extra the day she gave me the Astor Park tour. And she dated Gideon for a year, so she must have run into Brooke at the house on a bunch of occasions. "That woman was garbage," she adds. "Gold digger with a capital G." Either way, Reed didn't kill her. She arches a perfectly shaped eyebrow. "Is that what you want me to tell the cops?" I swallow my frustration. "You can tell them whatever you like, because he didn't do it. I wanted to talk to you about the other thing." "What other thing?" I shoot a glance at the main hall. It's empty. The Gideon and Dinah thing. According to Reed, Dinah broke into Gid's phone and stole nude pictures that he and Savannah had exchanged. With that ammo, she's holding a statutory rape charge over his head because Savannah was only 15 at the time, while Gideon was 18. At the sound of Gideon's name, Savannah's wary expression transforms into one of pure malice. "You mean that thing where my boyfriend screwed a trashy cougar?" she snaps. "Yeah, and that the trashy cougar is blackmailing him with pictures you sent him." I snap back. This time it's her turn to flinch.
Are you saying it's my fault Gid is in this mess? Because it's not. He's the cheater. He's the one who hooked up with that awful woman, and it's his fault she became obsessed with him and stole his phone. All I did was send pics to my boyfriend, Ella.
I see myself losing control of the conversation, so I hastily put on a calm, non-threatening tone.
I'm not blaming you at all, I promise. All I'm saying is that you're involved in this whether you want to be or not.
Gideon could get in a lot of trouble if the cops find out about Dinah and the pictures. Savannah doesn't answer.
I know you hate him, but I also know you don't want to see him go to jail.
And telling the detectives about it will only make them try to somehow use that information against Reed.
I glare at her.
And Reed's innocent.
Or at least I think he is.
She stays quiet for a long time. So long that I don't think I've gotten through to her. But then, she lets out a heavy breath and nods.
Fine. I'll keep my mouth shut.
Relief swamps me. But Savannah doesn't even give me the chance to thank her. She just walks away, without another word.
Chapter 9. Ella. I don't see Savannah again for the rest of the day. Normally I wouldn't think twice about that, since we don't have any afternoon classes together. But the paranoia is getting to me. She was supposed to speak to the detective at lunch. I was hoping she would track me down afterward and tell me about the interview, but she didn't, and I don't even catch a glimpse of her in the halls during the second half of the day. At lunch, though, Val confessed that the detectives left a message with her parents this morning asking for permission to interview her. I guess her aunt and uncle are like Callum, because they insisted on being present for Val and Jordan's interviews.
Yep, Jordan.
Apparently she's on Cousin's list too, which is very, very disturbing, because I know Jordan's only going to have terrible things to say about Reed. I'm not sure who the cops even spoke to today, other than Savannah. I'm dreading my own interview, but hopefully Callum can delay it for as long as possible. Maybe until these detectives do their stupid job and find the real killer.
If there's a real killer.
A silent scream forms in my throat, causing me to stop in the middle of the parking lot. I hate these thoughts that keep popping into my head. I hate that I'm still having doubts about Reed. He insists he didn't kill Brooke. He swears he didn't.
So why can't I 100% believe him?
The parking lot is for cars, little sis, not people.
I spin around to find Easton grinning at me. He gives me a little nudge forward, adding,
"Poor Lauren's been trying to pull out of that space for about, 2 minutes."
My gaze shifts to the red BMW with its engine running. Sure enough, Lauren Donovan is waving at me, a slightly apologetic look on her face, as if she's the one inconveniencing me, and not the other way around. I wave an apology at the twins' girlfriend and hurriedly step out of the way.
I spaced out, I tell Easton.
Still worried about the interviews?
Yeah. But I did speak to Savannah, and she promised she wouldn't say anything about the Gideon stuff.
Easton nods.
That's good, at least.
Yeah.
Ella.
Reed's voice comes from behind us.
Ride home with me.
I turn as he strides into the parking lot with Sebastian at his side. Again, my paranoia kicks in.
What happened? Don't you have practice?
He shakes his head.
East does, but I'm excused. Dad just texted and ordered me to come directly home.
Fear pricks my spine.
Why? What's going on?
I don't know.
Reed looks frustrated.
All he said was that it's important, and he already cleared it with Coach.
His face is hard, which means he's worried. I'm learning that Reed gets mean when he feels backed into a corner. And this corner, filled with police, investigators, and prison, has to feel like the smallest, loneliest corner in the world. Does he want me there too? I ask warily.
No, but I do.
Reed glances at his youngest brother.
Seb, you cool driving Ella's car back?
Sebastian nods.
No prob.
I toss him the keys, then watch as he heads for my convertible, while Easton jogs off to football practice. Reed and I climb into his Range Rover, but I'm not sure why he asked me to ride with him, because he doesn't say a single word for the first 5 minutes of the drive. I stare out the window, chewing on my thumbnail. Silent Reed is tough for me to deal with. It reminds me too much of when I first moved in with the Royals. All I received from Reed were glares and cutting remarks, which was a huge difference from what I was used to. Mom was slightly, okay, really, irresponsible, but she was always cheerful and never kept her emotions in check. I was the one who did that.
Say it.
Reed suddenly barks. I'm startled. Say what?
Whatever it is you're obsessing about. I can hear you thinking, and if you bite any harder on your finger, it's gonna come off.
Chagrined, I look down at the teeth marks on the side of my thumb. Rubbing the redness away, I say, I didn't think you noticed. He answers in a low, gruff tone.
I notice everything about you, baby.
I'm worried. You keep telling me not to be, but it's only getting worse, I admit. At school, it's easy to see the enemy, to categorize people into helpful or unhelpful, for you or against you. This thing just seems so big. So scary, but I keep that to myself. Reed doesn't need to hear my fears. He'd take them on his shoulders and try to carry them along with all the other baggage that's weighing him down.
It's all going to get taken care of.
He says, his capable hands guiding the SUV down the long paved driveway toward the Royal House.
Because I didn't do it.
Then who did?
Maybe the kid's father? Brooke was probably shaking down as many marks as she could that night. I wasn't the only idiot who...
He stops abruptly. I'm glad he does, because I don't like thinking of Reed having sex with anyone else, even if it was before me. God, it'd be so nice if he was a virgin. You should be a virgin, I inform him. He lets out a surprised laugh.
That's what got you all wound up?
No, but think about how many problems would be solved by that. You wouldn't have this thing with Brooke. The girls at school wouldn't be drooling all over you.
If I was a virgin... All those girls at school would be trying to get in my pants, so they could say they were the first to climb Mount Reed.
He grins as he pulls to a stop around the side of the house. The Royals have an entire parking area in the courtyard, with special brick pavers set into a spiral pattern that leads into a garage that stores all their vehicles. Except no one likes to use the garage. Usually the courtyard is filled with the black Rovers or Easton's cherry red pickup. Girls aren't like that, I say as I get out of the SUV and reach in for my backpack. They wouldn't compete to deflower you. Reed's hand is there first. He pulls the bag out of my grip with a smirk.
Girls are exactly like that. Why do you think Jordan's after you all the time? You're competition, babe. Doesn't matter what you've got downstairs, most people are competitive as shit. And the kids at Astor, they're the worst of the lot. If I was a virgin, that'd be one more contest for someone to win.
If you say so. He comes around the front of the Rover and drapes an arm around my shoulder. Dipping low so that his mouth touches the upper curve of my ear, he whispers,
We can play I'm the Virgin, and you're the experienced upperclassman, after I pop your cherry.
I hit him because he deserves it, but it only makes him laugh more. And even though he's laughing at my expense, I'm glad, because I like happy Reed over quiet, angry Reed. His good mood doesn't last, though. Callum greets us at the door with a stern look.
Good to see you're enjoying yourself.